Good morning. It's September 27th. The time is 8 a.m., and this is regional news for the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubenik. Authorities are just beginning to get a feel for just how badly flooding has damaged the vast network of oil and natural gas operations on the Front Range. KDNK's Ed Williams flew with EcoFlight over the damaged areas in Weld County, where thousands of oil and gas sites were swamped by the floodwaters, and brings us this report.
It's been over a week since the record-shattering rains that decimated much of Colorado's Front Range stopped falling, and residents and emergency managers are still struggling to ascertain the extent of the flood's destruction. Today, the countryside is a patchwork of standing floodwater, with washed-out roads and murky ponds the size of small towns blanketing the landscape. And as the waters subside, a new emergency is taking shape in the country's most heavily drilled county.
Okay, here's where we get into the deeper water and a lot more oil and gas well tanks inside the water.
Flying over Weld County's flooded gas fields, the view is peppered by partially and fully submerged drill sites. Thousands of gas wells remain underwater, train car-sized storage boxes of fracking fluid are strewn like matchsticks in muddy fields, and dozens of large tanks of crude oil and drilling chemicals that were ripped from their moorings during the deluge now lie on their sides in the mud, some leaking brownish-black liquid into the nearby South Platte River.
This area here had about 50% more water yesterday, so a lot of the tanks that you're seeing on the actual soil were submerged yesterday and the day before.
As of Tuesday, the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, or COGCC, has confirmed 11, quote, notable spills that have leaked more than 34,000 gallons of crude oil and other chemicals into the environment. Officials say over the next few weeks, they expect to find more. The COGCC has deployed just over 20 inspectors on the ground to assess the impacted flood areas. So far, inspectors have only been able to survey 40% of the flood zone for oil and gas damage, and many of the damaged sites they have found are inaccessible because of high water and deep mud. Other potentially damaged infrastructure, like pipelines and gas conduits, lay buried underground, also out of the inspector's reach. Todd Hartman is a spokesman for the COGCC.
In fact, in some cases, they can't access the wells. So access remains a big challenge. What's maybe happening to infrastructure below ground, such as gathering lines and other pipelines, we can't say we have a full handle on it.
Given the size of the task at hand, grassroots citizens groups are helping to fill the gap for the state, organizing search parties to help them find and document spills. Russell Mendel is campaign director for Frack Free Colorado, one of the groups working to find contamination in the flood zone. His team has documented dozens of spills in Weld County and elsewhere, but Mendel says some of the volunteers working on the search effort have gotten sick from exposure to chemicals at the spill sites.
Yeah, we had a few people who went up to just southeast of Greeley, and they saw some of the wells, the tanks that had been turned over, and they were there, and their faces were burning, their eyes were burning, their throats were burning. Actually, one of the people who went out, their throat is still burning a couple days afterwards. It's really concerning.
Conservation groups are criticizing the state for allowing oil and gas operators to drill 50 feet from waterways, saying the proximity of many wells to area rivers exacerbated the damage by the flood.
Well, we obviously have compromised wells and overturned tanks. We've seen sheens on the surface of the water. Now, that indicates
that's Weston Wilson, a former scientist with the Environmental Protection Agency, who was out surveying the flood damage last week. He says while some of the chemicals released in the spills should evaporate into the air, the dense crude oil and other heavy contaminants will likely seep into the groundwater. Residents here, he says, could be discovering contamination under their feet for years to come.
So we could be left with dozens of contaminated sites here as people return. When I see an event like this, this is an unprecedented event. The National Weather Service described this as a flood of biblical proportions. Indeed, it is. For example, we've had the previous record high in Boulder County was 6 inches of rain in any 1 month. In this 1 week period, there's been 18 inches of rain. We never see records obliterated to such extent. There's a lesson here. This is a climate-induced event. We must get off fossil fuels, or this will be our future. After all, here in Colorado, we've had drought, fire, and flood in the same year.
COGCC spokesman Todd Hartman says at this point, the state hasn't considered any policy changes to prevent a similar catastrophe in the future. For now, authorities are focusing on surveying the damage from the flooding, and Hartman says until conditions improve in the Front Range, it's impossible to know how long that task will take to complete. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Ed Williams.
This November, voters in several communities along the Front Range will consider whether to ban or delay fracking in their towns. And as Benta Berkland reports, the ballot initiatives are taking place in many areas still recovering from devastating floods. Recent figures show that 12 notable spills have polluted the South Platte River with 37,000 gallons of oil.
Both sides of the fracking debate were out in full force during a recent community festival for the city of Broomfield. Voters there will decide whether to pass a 5-year fracking moratorium.
Are you guys Broomfield voters?
Huh?
Are you Broomfield voters?
Yes, actually. 18, correct?
18, perfect. Yeah. Have you heard about Question 300?
No.
Several women, including Dottie Roski, are passing out literature for the organization Our Broomfield. The group is fighting to stop fracking. Roski says fracking isn't good for anyone, and she thinks it contaminates the ground, water, and air. She wants the oil and gas industry to slow down.
They keep getting closer and closer and closer to populations. So maybe one day they'll want to build down my street. I don't know. But right now I'm fighting for the people who are at risk.
Public concern over hydraulic fracturing has ratcheted up in recent years as drilling moves into more and more communities. This fall, residents of Boulder, Lafayette, and Fort Collins will also vote on anti-fracking ballot initiatives. Residents in the city of Longmont already voted to ban fracking.
It's an industrial process. I think it's fair and reasonable to ask questions about it.
Former Republican State Representative Dom Beasley chairs the Broomfield Balanced Energy Coalition. While questions are understandable, he thinks an outright ban or moratorium on the practice is the wrong approach. Beasley says fracking is safe and carries a small footprint.
We have to tap this resource responsibly. If we don't, it's sort of like denying a man who's dying of thirst of water. The resources are there. We know we can extract them safely. You know, if we deny ourselves these resources, energy costs go up, jobs go down, and people's lives are worse off.
Supporters of fracking also say stringent environmental rules are already in place. Republican Mike Shelton sits on the Broomfield City Council.
We try to look at this as any other industry. What would we do to protect it? And we just look for the things that's specific to that industry. So it's air quality, soil quality, water quality, certainly.
The recent flooding along the Front Range has only highlighted the stark divide over the issue. At one point, close to 2,000 oil and gas wells were shut down because of the floodwaters. Images of dirty water and toppled storage tanks quickly went viral.
So it's been, unfortunately, creating a lot of fear among our community members at a time when we really need to be coming together to do a response and recovery efforts.
Tisha Schuler heads the Colorado Oil and Gas Association. The industry group is tracking what they call notable oil spills along the South Platte River. Governor John Hickenlooper says it could have been much worse.
When you look at the amount of water going through that river, it will process these pollutants very, very rapidly. Not that any pollution is a good thing, but in a flood of this magnitude, to have as little as we've had.
But for activists in the environmental community, the governor's comments aren't reassuring. Sam Schaubacher is with Food and Water Watch. He says the spills will create long-lasting impacts.
We're talking about tens of thousands of toxic chemicals floating down the river, potentially ending up in communities next to homes on agricultural land. I think that we are just beginning to see the extent of the devastation. It clearly demonstrates why these ballot measures are going forward to stop fracking.
The Colorado Department of Natural Resources says it won't speculate on how it would respond if voters pass the measures. Colorado has already joined a lawsuit with the oil and gas industry against the city of Longmont for its voter-approved fracking ban, arguing it violates state law. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
Capitol coverage is funded by the Gill Foundation's Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, a proud supporter of local organizations like the Colorado Department of Education and its programs to prepare and inspire the next generation of science, technology, engineering, and math teachers. And by North Star Bank Colorado. With their community relationships, local knowledge, and expanded financial resources, North Star Bank Colorado is redefining community banking and helping build a brighter future for Colorado.
Federal authorities brought criminal charges yesterday against two Colorado brothers who grew cantaloupe linked to a 2011 outbreak that killed 33 people and sickened hundreds more. According to the Denver Post, Eric and Ryan Jensen turned themselves in to federal marshals after being charged with four counts of introducing adulterated food into the food supply. The outbreak of the Listeria-contaminated melon was linked to Jensen Farms in Granada. An investigation by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has officially linked 33 deaths to the case, but 10 other people infected with the bacteria after eating cantaloupe from the farm have since died. The brothers could each see up to a year in jail and $250,000 fines. Since the 2011 outbreak, a number of lawsuits have been filed against the Jensens. The brothers eventually filed bankruptcy, and their insurance was used to compensate victims. The Paonia Town Council on Tuesday voted to bring a civil lawsuit against former town employee Kristen Chesnick, who was convicted of embezzling nearly $400,000 from the town. According to the Merchant Herald, council members have debated whether the suit is a good idea. Some said the town had a moral obligation to do everything it could to fully recover the stolen money, while others felt the civil action is unnecessary and that there's little chance of recovering the funds entirely. The Merchant Herald reports the town will be looking to an outside attorney to manage the suit, since town attorney Jim Briscoe is set to retire at the end of the year. The town of Ridgeway is set to begin a project to rehabilitate the Lake Otanawanda Reservoir. The Telluride Watch reports the project will greatly improve the town's water storage capacity. When the $2.4 million project is completed, the town will be able to exercise its full storage right, bringing the lake's capacity from 100 to 600 acre-feet. According to the Watch, the project also aims to make the reservoir's delivery system more efficient. Ridgeway's municipal water right on the lake predates the Colorado River Compact of 1922, but due to its small size and declining condition, the town only stores currently a fraction of the water it's legally entitled to. After the renovation, the town should be able to supply water to the community for at least 4 months during a drought event. And the Denver Post reports a Denver area meeting of investors and marijuana startup companies this week led to over $1 million being poured into the newly legalized industry. 22 marijuana companies looking for capital met with over 60 investors from the ArcView Group on Wednesday, with many of those investors already involved in the industry, but at least one venture capitalist from British Columbia getting involved for the first time. That investor said the new marijuana industry is, quote, every bit as dynamic and every bit as exciting as the computer and telecommunications startups he's worked with in the past. And today for this episode of Western Slope Skies, we'll learn about stars in the skies during the early fall season.
Early fall nights can be crisp, but it's rewarding to go out after dark on clear, moonless evenings to see some stars and constellations in our western slope skies. Rising in the northeast, just after dark, you will find a group of stars that looks like a W on its side. These stars are part of the constellation Cassiopeia, which commemorates a queen in Greek mythology. Although Cassiopeia never sets from our latitude, fall and winter are the best times to see this constellation and other nearby constellations that are prominent in mythology. Some of these include Perseus, the legendary Greek hero, Cassiopeia's daughter, Andromeda, and Cassiopeia's husband, King Cepheus. You can find these constellations by using a star chart or star chart app on your smartphone or tablet. Just after dark, look for the sideways W that marks Cassiopeia high in the northeast. Now, gaze toward the eastern horizon, and you'll see four moderately bright stars that outline a square tipped on its side. The sides of this square measure about 1.5 times the width of your fist when held at arm's length. This is the Great Square of Pegasus, the winged flying horse of Greek mythology. From the northeasternmost star in the Great Square, follow a chain of three stars farther to the northeast. These mark part of the constellation Andromeda. Continuing to the northeast, you'll find the constellation Perseus, with its two bright stars, Mirfak and Algol. Cepheus can be found above Cassiopeia, high in the northern sky. You've been listening to Western Slope Skies, produced by members of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society. I'm Art Trevina.
And thanks for joining us this morning. Stay tuned for the KVNF Sports Report. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.
Greetings and good morning. This is Eric Gould with your KVNF Sports Report for Friday, September 27th. High school football action heats up in the Western Slope Conference tonight. All eyes will be on Cedar Edge, where the defending 1A state champion Bruins play host to the always tough Hotchkiss Bulldogs at 7 p.m. Both teams are 3-1 on the season and are ranked 3rd and 4th in the state, respectively, according to a Denver Post poll. Cedar Edge will be well-rested after a bye week, while the battle-tested Bulldogs defeated Monta Vista 34-33 in overtime last week in their tune-up for tonight's pivotal matchup. Junior quarterback Devin Roop had his best game as a Bulldog, running for 107 rushing yards and throwing for 178 passing yards in the win. Alex Smith chipped in with 167 yards on the ground, and Hotchkiss sealed the dramatic victory when freshman Ryan Halfley kicked the extra point in overtime. Last season, these two teams played twice, and Cedar Edge won both games by a combined 5 points. Whoever wins tonight will have a leg up in the race for a very competitive league title, as well as vital playoff positioning. The Paonia Eagles got back on the winning track with a 48-6 win at Dolores last week. Paonia was led by sophomore quarterback Taylor Walters, who ran for 153 rushing yards and threw for 139 passing yards in the victory. He also accounted for 4 Paonia touchdowns. The 3-1 Eagles open Western Slope Conference play tonight at 7 on the road at Roaring Fork High School in Carbondale. The Rams are 2-2 on the season. Looking at other teams around the listening area, Montrose has moved up to number 2 in the state in the 4A classification after the Indians dismantled Hinckley 49-6 last week. Mike Rocha continued his outstanding season, running for 97 yards and 3 touchdowns in the Montrose win. Montrose puts its 5-0 record on the line tonight in a huge matchup against the number 1 team in 4A, Monarch. The defending state champion Coyotes are 3-0 and will host the Indians tonight at 7 in Louisville. Delta continues its march for respect and cracked into the 3A poll, moving into the number 9 position in the state after the Panthers beat Moffitt County 53-7 last week. Quarterback Cade Gafford threw for 228 yards and 2 touchdowns in the victory. Derek Horn ran for 52 yards for Delta, and Ryan Whiteside caught 7 passes for 111 yards and 1 touchdown in the Panthers' win. Delta travels to Glenwood Springs at 7 tonight for a tilt against the 1-4 Demons. And finally, in cross country, Andrew Tiedemann set the course record and won the individual boys title at last Saturday's Hotchkiss Invitational. The Bulldogs junior completed the circuit in 17 minutes, 59.17 seconds. Montrose won the boys team title with 11 points. The Hotchkiss girls captured the team title and placed 6 runners in the top 20. Senior Natalie Anderson claimed her 3rd career win at home with a time of 20 minutes, 53 seconds. Sophomore Mae Anderson finished 2nd in the race for the Bulldogs with her time of 21 minutes, 50.34 seconds, finishing just ahead of Delta sophomore Michaela Music. And that concludes your KVNF Sports Report. Stay tuned to KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio for future sports reports on Fridays. For KVNF, my name is Eric Gould. Good luck to all the teams in our listening area, and thanks so much for listening.